This is the Screaming Pods Network on ScreamingPods.com.
And now, on with the program.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Pilot Project. This is the show where we like to traipse around the jungles in scantily clad clothing in the jungles of the subcontinent looking for legends of weird, bad, and failed TV shows, raiding resources as we go. And my partner over there, he's the generic Indiana Jones adventurer with a 10-watt smile to my very sexy playmate Jungle Girl. That's Dirty Dirty Dustin. And our returning guest is a generic European villain who is trying to ruin all of our plans, and that would be the famous Esther D.
That's me.
See, I swear this guy, he reminded me of Upskirt Kurt from Bob's Burgers. If you have not seen that episode, you need to go see it. It's a guy who flies a plane, and he's trying to take Linda out to this, just basically flying around a town or whatever, and he fakes having aircraft problems and has to stop on this island where he has champagne and all this other stuff and is trying to get with her, and it's a very funny episode.
Yeah, I don't remember that episode. I guess I haven't seen that one. But yeah, I forgot to mention, you are the torchbearer of me too, the guardian of me too.
Exactly.
We were talking about the pre-show there. You showed me the picture, and I was blown away by quite the resemblance between Cutter in this show and Upskirt Kurt.
He does look a lot like him.
I'll have to show that to Esther here shortly.
Yeah.
Today we're talking about, and this is Esther's pick. This is all from her brain. She demanded to do this show today. It is the...
He's trying to protect his feminist reputation right now.
It is the legendary show, of course, Sheena, Queen of the Jungle, and it ran from 2000 to 2002. Had a total episode run of 35 episodes, and it was...
And I bet those were in syndication like a billion times.
Oh, also. I'm sure. I'm sure. I don't remember the show at all, to be frank. I
don't either, actually.
I thought I would remember this, but I had no recollection whatsoever.
Yeah.
This was developed and written by Douglas Schwartz from Baywatch. Of course, Gina Lee Nolan, who stars in the show, is also from Baywatch, as is Upskirt Kurt in the show. Upskirt Cutter. And Stephen L. Sears, who we've encountered on the show before when we did Swamp Thing, the 1991, 92 Swamp Thing?
This is the 92 one, yeah.
92 Swamp Thing.
It's a small world.
It is a small world, and because it feels just like Swamp Thing.
Well, that, and I feel like there's been a lot of these pilots we had no idea were associated with previous pilots that we've done, and things just go in a circle. It's really weird.
Time is a flat circle.
It's like the same people make the same bad stuff over and over again.
All right, so the official description of Sheena, Queen of the Jungle. Matt Cutter hopes for a big payday when he agrees to fly a team deep into the jungle to search for a missing scientist. Too late, he discovers the men are really illegally searching for diamonds and is nearly killed by escaping. He is rescued by a beautiful blonde shapeshifter and agrees to help her drive the interlopers from her homeland. So, then we get to
That's basically it.
That's a succinct plot, yeah. The IMDb review is from Carf Music. He posted this in August of 2001. The title is, I'm having fun watching Cutter, and that's pretty much the summary of the entire thing. But he says, when I first saw the show, I was surfing the channels, and I stopped when I saw these two people having a conversation what looked to be looked like the front of a bar. One was a grizzly-looking fellow, but the other one really caught my eye, about the best-looking guy I've ever seen. But it wasn't just his looks. He was exchanging quips with the bearded guy, and his lighthearted, sardonic sense of humor made me laugh. I love it when a guy can make me laugh. Found out his name was Cutter. Thought I'd watch the rest of the show and found out it was pretty good. Since then, I've been watching it weekly. It's exciting, and I like the snail-paced romance growing between the two leads. Big fan of Cutter, this guy, Upskirt Kurt.
Yeah, apparently he is. Although, we don't know if it's a guy, do we? Carf Music? I don't know what...
Oh, for some reason, I was thinking it was Kurt.
No,
okay,
no.
So yeah, you're right. Carf could be.
Yeah, I have no idea what gender that would be associated with that name.
And why couldn't Kurt be a woman? I started watching Downton Abbey with my wife.
Uh-huh.
It's her second watch. I never thought I'd like Downton Abbey, but there's a man on there named Evelyn.
Yes.
Evelyn. I mean, I never would have thought that Evelyn would have been a man's name, but apparently in 19 teens England, Evelyn was a man's name.
The early 1900s.
How dare you assume that gender?
I know that,
exactly
that there are indeed gendered names. I know.
This is why you're not very woke, Mark.
I know. This is why I don't carry the torch for me too, like yourself.
Just get out.
I'm the anti woke.
You're dead asleep.
I'm dead asleep. We just got done watching the new Aziz special on Netflix, and he talks about that at being so woke that you don't have a forehead anymore. Your eyes are so wide open.
Right.
Yeah, that's my eyes are shut all the way.
Yeah.
All right. This cast stars Gina Lee Nolan from Baywatch. She played Sheena in all 35 episodes. John Allen Nelson, who's Upskirt Kurt, aka Cutter, in this. Margot Moore, who was from Forrest Gump. Oh, I forgot to say Upskirt Cutter there was from Baywatch in 24. Margaret Moore, who plays Callie, who is sort of a shaman chief of a tribe.
Yeah. I guess she comes in every episode.
Shamaness, yeah.
Yeah.
And Kevin Quigley, who plays Mendelssohn, who is the grizzly-looking fellow that was mentioned in Karf's review. He actually was also in Swamp Thing 1990. So,
yeah, right.
Time's a flat circle.
Yep.
This show is very reminiscent of syndicated shows of the time. So
it's very Xena. It's very Hercules-y. Yeah.
What was the show with Bruce Campbell that was... It took place in the Old West. Anyways, it was around the same time.
Mutant X. It was around that time.
All that same low budget production.
Kind of like soft looking camera that doesn't really look quite, even 480p at the time.
A lot of stock footage.
Yeah.
A lot of stock footage, especially in the case where they're trying to bring in wild animals.
Oh, yeah. A ton of Discovery Channel cuts in there.
Yeah, absolutely. Although, unlike modern shows, at least, well. It's not as bad as when we watched Airwolf. Remember, and they had
the
same explosion of the training videos from like 1960s naval battles or something like that. You know,
yes, I do.
It wasn't that bad. At least it fit the quality of the time.
That is true.
This show obviously takes place in the wild jungles of a Universal Studios backlot, just like Swamp Thing. And some guy that he comes back later in the show, but some jungle slob, and somebody's gonna have to explain to me exactly what's going on because he's getting chased by some sort of monster. We know that. That's easy to see. Some schlubby dude. He's on the run from something. The monster attacks him. Something drops out of his bag.
The something he's running from is not her?
No, it is her. Okay. But we don't know that it's Sheena, Queen of the Jungle.
Yeah,
at the time.
Sure.
Maybe it's the villain of the week. We don't know.
Yeah, good point.
But this monster attacks him, and his bag drops open, and looks like a monkey hand falls out. But this monkey hand is never referred to. So you think that having an obvious shot of focusing on monkey hand falling out of bag is going to be some sort of...
Well, why do they focus on it, basically?
Plot point.
Yeah.
And I watched this episode twice, as I usually do, unlike Dirty Dancing, which I didn't.
Yeah.
But we never refer back to this thing in his bag anymore, why he's getting chased. So someone explain to me, what is this monkey paw? And why does another gorilla attack him in the end?
I was hoping you may know, Esther. I do not.
That's one of the few things I'm not sure about, other than, I think it's just a hook to get people's attention real fast.
It's very reminiscent of Swamp Thing, though, how it opened up with a guy, a little person hanging up upside down in the middle of a swamp, and then they just cut immediately into the intro.
That's true.
Like, that must be their writing style, to have some random chase thing or something crazy going on in the beginning.
The non sequitur, yeah.
Yeah, and they didn't really explain his story in Swamp Thing too well, either. At least he was referred to again. This monkey paw, I don't remember that coming up again in the whole episode.
It doesn't. I mean, we see him in the very end of the episode. So in this one, he gets attacked by a gorilla, essentially a silverback gorilla, and killed. And we see him again at the end of the episode, strung up.
Yeah.
When the villain of the week is killed. Spoiler alert, if you haven't seen this. But the only thing I could think, and it made me, when the monkey paw fell, it made me think of, I'm pretty sure it was a Simpsons episode, about the monkey paw.
Uh-huh.
And then Mr. Right. Burns has a monkey paw. And then I started looking it up, and the monkey paw was a supernatural story from 1902. I guess there's been a lot of takes on this. And I remember in The Simpsons, he had wishes, and every wish would have a terrible consequence.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I think
supernatural thing.
Maybe that's what it was. Maybe it was the monkey paw supernatural plot device. But it's, again, not referred to. It's maybe look, so. I am digging for answers here. I am digging like they were digging for diamonds in the show. I have no clue.
I can't deny that my brain went there too, that I thought of the Simpsons thing. And thank God there's Simpsons to help teach me things in life.
Of course.
Sure, yeah.
But yeah, that maybe that's just like a supernatural gem they were throwing in there to make you think, is this guy searching the jungle for supernatural tidbits, and that's what was falling out of his bag. But then, like you said, that they just never circled back around to answer that question.
Yeah.
Maybe if we watch the entire series, maybe that's what the whole story arc pivots on, is the monkey paw.
She got her powers from the monkey paw. Yeah.
I just wish they would have come back to it a little bit, like at least give a... some line of dialogue like, oh, some guy, I just, so if Upskirt Kurt had maybe taken that guy out there
right
to look for the monkey paw, like,
that's a good point.
He paid me $20,000 to take him to the middle of La Vista or whatever it was called,
right,
to look for the monkey paw. Okay, then at least we have a throwaway line that explains the plot point,
right?
But we get nothing.
Yeah, we got nothing at all.
Monkey paw Matt shows up in episode 4. No, I
maybe
no
maybe so
If anybody'd like to find out, both seasons are streaming on Crackle.
That's true.
Yes, it's, please tag us in social media.
And they're 16:9 glory, actually.
And please, please watch all of them. Please report back to us. We'd love to have that follow-up. Apparently, so Crackle has the full episodes now, and that's... You can find this on Crackle or Daily Motion. Crackle used to have them in a mini-episode format. So if you couldn't quite stand the 43 minutes, you could have them in an easily digestible, I don't know how much, maybe 20 minutes? I don't know what a mini-sode format of it was, but apparently Crackle's had this for quite a while.
Wow.
Which, I gotta say, I hate Crackle, by the way.
Yeah, I do too.
They repeat the same commercials 5 times in a row.
And play too many of them in each break.
Yes, it's like going back to old-school broadcast TV.
Yeah.
Where you had to, it was like... We're living in a modern age. Why can't we skip past these? And I do remember when I was watching a movie on there at one point, because it was the only place it was available, the commercial breaks, it only lets you pause for maybe 2 minutes. Like, I had to pause it and go, get up and do something, come back, and it started the movie without me hitting anything. So they only let you pause for a certain amount of time.
Oh, nice.
It's really, really dumb.
Well, I paused and it wouldn't start again, so then I had to go back into it. Then it played another 3 minutes of commercials before it resumed.
Screw you, Crackle.
Yes. Screw you.
All right.
They got to make all that money for how expensive Sheena is to play on there.
Which commercial did it show you? To me, it showed me the Will Ferrell cell phone ads about 5 times in a row.
To put the phone in the bowl or whatever. Yeah. There were a couple of those. And then what would you do for a Klondike bar? Those two were like on constant repeat. Yeah.
Oh, okay. So I have a little thing I noticed at the very, very beginning. Like you said, the show starts right away in the middle of a chase scene, in the middle of a jungle. This guy is partially being chased by a gorilla.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And he's being beat up by a gorilla. And you notice, if you're watching, that the gorilla reaches up in a human-like stabbing motion to start beating up the guy.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're watching this, your brain might be like, okay, this is a guy in a gorilla suit. But, as you are kind of learning the show, you're like, okay, so this is Sheena in the gorilla form. So... My brain goes forward like 3 levels and is starting to think, okay, so when Sheena's in animal form, does she often attack people in a human-like way? Because that would be weird.
Well, I don't know. I don't know that was Sheena, because they said that she refers to later. She doesn't cross the river, because at the very end of that opening scene, you see her in which you later find out is Sheena, in the mud. She's in the mud makeup.
Yeah.
And across the river, there's a gorilla attacking. So that wasn't Sheena attacking her.
It wasn't?
No, I thought it was the first time I watched it, too. And then I made the connection. It's like, no, she mentions later there are rogue animals.
I appreciate you watching it twice.
Yeah, well, I have to get through these critical plot points.
Yeah.
Yeah, so she explains later there are certain rogue animals that she can't be friends with. And she specifically refers to the gorilla, the silverback gorillas.
So that might have just been a bad actor.
That was just a bad actor. that was a day player from the set of Michael Crichton's Congo.
Wonderful. Apparently.
Using a leftover costume.
So that was pretty funny then.
Yes.
Yeah. I will note, though, that fun fact, silverback gorillas are actually not silver like they depicted in the show.
Oh.
Silverback gorillas they are the alpha males within their tribe or pack, whatever you call a number of gorillas.
Yeah.
But they just have they're bigger than the rest of gorillas. They have bigger canine teeth, and they just have a silver stripe on their back. That's why they're called, they're not entirely silver.
Gotcha.
So that's just...
They didn't care about that.
Maybe he was a very, very old silverback, and so he just gone gray.
Right.
Maybe he was a silver fox of gorillas.
I
don't know.
That's way too many details for this show.
Look, I'm digging for facts here. Trying to make sense of this show.
Yeah.
After the jungle slob gets strung up by silverback gorilla, we get to the intro, which I don't know if you pulled the music, but it's fairly spare as far as intro songs go.
I did not pull the intro song.
Mm-hmm. It's just indiscriminate jungle music with drums. And the interesting thing was, this was the time of Xena.
Yep.
Maybe Xena was over by this point. I don't know. But we got
it. It was right after it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, we get a Xena type yell in it. As she's swinging through the trees. But she never does that in the context of the show itself. I thought that was too obvious.
Well, in the pilot.
In the pilot.
Maybe she does it over the 2 seasons.
Again, if you watch the entire season, please go back to us. Does she do the la 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 la?
Yes. correct, Mark, if that is. Yeah.
Well, it seems like if you're going to have a character like, this character's been around for a long time. She is, a female equivalent of Tarzan. And Tarzan and George of the Jungle had their yells. I mean, why wouldn't they include a signature yell even in the pilot?
Yeah, true.
That's true. Well, there is a scene, a segue scene where they kind of allude to her climbing through the trees, but they don't show her yelling specifically. But I right. do agree with you.
Right.
And in that opening credit scene, it's interesting, you know, they show her showering, but they don't show all the other characters showering. I think that should be more equal.
That's true.
Every character should be shown showering.
We should see Mendelsohn getting showered.
Right. You know?
Should see the monkeys getting showered.
It's your bearded guy.
Yeah.
Right. You know, everybody.
Although we do see Upskirt Kurt without a shirt.
Yeah, true.
So that's...
That is their counter for the whole thing, apparently.
Well, apparently, in every episode, I don't think we saw it in this episode, but apparently I saw that there was a contractual requirement to have Upskirt Kurt without a shirt in every episode they're in.
They're going
to
show her side boob. They got to show
yeah.
those.
Oh, yeah. they showed butt. They showed side yeah. boob. I mean, they were not ashamed of just putting it out there. Like, let's exploit Gina Lee Nolan for her playmate.
Well, Gina Lee Nolan was not ashamed of busting the clothes off either. No. So I think they kind of all fit the...
They were not... Yeah, they weren't bashful about, like, just ramming the sex in there.
No, they were not.
Which, whatever, it's, you know, as long as you know what you're getting into, I guess that's what's important. As long as you know that's the product you're putting out. let's put it that way.
It's like, shocker, Pamela Anderson was in VIP, and yeah. there's a lot of cleavage in it. Yeah. I can't believe it.
Exactly. I do want to note that in the intro also, they show all these majestic shots of, you know, huge African trees and majestic animals, and then they throw in a vulture. It's like, or not a vulture, it was a condor, which is a yeah. type of vulture, but it's like, couldn't you have picked, there are more majestic birds on the African subcontinent
yes.
than a bird that looks like Abe Vigoda.
Yeah, I agree.
I didn't understand. It's like, oh, boom, 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 boom. Maybe
that's the only stock footage they could afford.
Yeah, they can only afford condors.
nobody wanted to pay much for vultures. So
all I could think of was it was in Jungle Book that had the two vultures that were. No, it was that Christmas short that we used to watch. They had the three vultures that play like they're Larry Moe and Curly.
Oh yeah.
Or was it the fat guy and skinny guy from the black and white cereals? I can't.
Talking about Laurel and Hardy.
Laurel and Hardy. They were yeah. Laurel and Hardy. It was one of those.
Yeah.
There's a Christmas short about a murderous grandmother who's trying to kill her grandkids.
Yeah.
That was from the 80s, and we watch it every year.
Yeah.
And it's hilarious, but it's centered around an anthology movie that came out. It was a 3D movie at the time.
Yeah.
It's the only short worth watching in this entire thing, but there's like a zombie host who's supposed to be like Rod Serling.
Yeah.
And then there's these background characters, two or three of which are either Laurel and Hardy or the Three Stooges, but they're condors, which right. is really a really strange choice.
It is a really, yeah.
Very strange.
It's a really weird concept.
And that was a non sequitur, much yes. like the rest of this show.
Yep.
So then we cut to a generic Universal Studios backlot of an ethnic village that I suppose is supposed to be Africa or South America or something like that. And of course, you know, rather than show any main characters that are people of color, we of course have two white guys.
Yeah,
we've got Upskirt Kurt, and we've got Mendelsohn, who is dressed like convict number one. Right. For some reason, he's wearing an all orange jumpsuit, like he just got broken out of prison. In the middle of the jungle, he's dressed like a convict, yeah. which I didn't understand.
Really weird, yeah.
Mendelsohn is sewing up Kurt, and apparently Kurt, on his last run, got attacked. He went on another one where I guess he's getting attacked on every run he goes on. He dropped off some people, and somebody hit him with tried to fire him with a German 88 assault rifle.
Apparently.
So he's sewing up from that. And this is when, did you pull the audio of Mendelsohn's snarky comments?
No, I didn't.
Okay. We've got the stereotypical, the TV trope of the bitter, snarky sidekick. It's just, of course, and this is really the only substance that Mendelsohn gets in the entire show.
That is true.
Other than a nervous shaking of his head later, once the bad guy shows up.
That was super important too.
Yeah. This is when the vaguely European villain of the week shows up. His name is Norlis. He's there ostensibly under the guise of, they're hunting for a scientist that got lost in the Vista or the Mist or
yes.
La Mista or whatever it was called. They were this uncharted region of Africa, South America.
Right.
And he wants to hire Kurt to take him into the jungle, him and his team, ostensibly to find the scientist, and they're there to protect the environment, but they are actually there
to steal diamonds.
To steal diamonds. The mysterious diamonds. Again, I don't understand. Like, nobody knows this region of the earth.
Right.
But they know there's diamonds there.
And like a ton, right? What was it? 500,000 or yeah, 5 million like or something?
They said $500 million worth.
Oh, half a billion. Okay. I was way under.
Half a billion worth yeah. of diamonds.
And they know this somehow.
Oh, they know it. And they're there to rape the environment with dynamite.
Apparently. Yeah. And this is the part that reminded me of Mark when Cutter actually asked what's in the boxes. And the guy busts out $500 and sets it on fire.
Yes.
It yeah. kind of reminds me of you at a restaurant. Oh, yeah. You got the waiter's tip sitting right. out there. If they ask you the wrong question, right. you just pull a couple of bucks back.
If they don't refill my water promptly, I pull out $500 and set it on fire.
And they burn the most fake looking $100 yeah. bills I've ever seen in my life. They didn't even have Benjamin Franklin facing the right way. They could have at least done that.
Didn't even notice that.
Yeah, it was terrible.
And it seemed like that scene stretched way too long.
Oh, yeah, it did.
Did we really need the melodrama of pulling out the $100 bills, pulling them out of the roll, setting them on fire? That was $500 from your $15,000 bill, or whatever he said.
No, we didn't need it. Well, he didn't need much of anything in the show, but we did not need that.
And so when the other thing I don't understand is Sheena's her powers. So when Kurt takes them on the trip, he's taking them through the continent. They're getting closer to the mist, and Sheena throws a spear through the plane. And
oh, yeah.
I looked at her powers on Wikipedia. She doesn't have super strength. She has slightly above average strength. She throws a spear through the plane, which makes the entire plane crash because she throws it through the rudder.
Right, right.
What are those things on the side on the wings are? Are those rudders?
Ailerons? To me, it looked like it like maybe stuck it together to where he couldn't manipulate it. So that's actually what caused it to crash.
Yeah.
I don't know.
But still, throwing a spear through right. a plane. Supposedly, her only powers are telepathy with animals, and she has if she stares longingly into their eyes, she can shapeshift.
Right.
But not the ability to throw a wooden spear through through like two pieces of sheet metal.
Yeah. Yeah, that's, from the ground, way up in the air like that. Yes. Yeah, it's a little bit ridiculous. I mean, a lot of this is a little bit ridiculous.
Yes, I'm not saying we can't stretch the boundaries of reality here.
Yeah. Are we glazing over anything, Esther, you wanted to add to?
Not yet. Not
okay.
yet.
Okay, yeah. Please interject if we start to glaze over things. They land on the beach. Kurt discovers that they're not there to actually preserve the environment. They're there to actually destroy it because in a silly way, the top falls off a case of dynamite. Oh, no, they're here to actually mine diamonds.
Then he saw what was in the box.
He doesn't quite grasp this when he's flying over the Sahara or whatever and the guy's shooting at zebras.
Right.
And he's like, I'm a door gunner, man. He's just firing at zebras indiscriminately. Like, that's an excuse.
Right.
This is when, I guess, Sheena actually shows up to attack the guys at this point. She's taking the plane down. She comes in and Kurt is about to get killed.
Yeah.
And which this is where they imply that he's some badass fighter because he does practically like half a backflip to knock the gun out of a guy's hand. Because once he unveils that he knows about their plot, they draw on him. He, like I said, does a backflip to knock the gun out of the guy's hand, then does a kip up, which I don't really describe a kip up, but it's a way of getting off the ground, like launching yourself into the air.
Yeah.
And then he runs away and falls into some quicksand.
Right.
But they imply that he's like this badass fighter by doing that, but then he never shows that again.
I was going to say, the rest of the episode, it's not implied.
No, he's kind of a buffoon, really.
Yes.
He's got no fighting skills whatsoever. He's slow to put things together, like real slow.
Oh, yeah.
Well, he had looked into the eyes of a fighter and gotten those powers temporarily.
He mentally communicated.
Yeah, he stole her powers temporarily.
That's what it was.
Exactly.
But did you notice, I noticed this, that was exactly 10 minutes into the scene is when you see quicksand and a gorilla.
Oh, yeah.
I could just imagine.
Shit's getting real.
I could just imagine somebody like pitching this show to a network executive. They're just like, just imagine 10 minutes into the show, you're going to have quicksand and a gorilla.
All kinds of action.
And a network executive is like, sign me up.
Give them all the money.
Syndicate that shit.
We're going to make millions. I think it's funny. Like, I looked up something about quicksand because, of course, this is the 80s. This is very much an 80s thing. I remember growing up, quicksand, I always thought anytime we're going to go out in nature, especially if I go to the jungle, we're going to get trapped by quicksand.
It's going to kill you.
Yeah, and you have to learn, don't make any emotion. Eventually, somebody will come by with a vine and pull you out of it.
Princess Bride scared us all with that.
Princess Bride, Pitfall, back in the day. There was always quicksand in every corner of nature lurking.
Right.
But I looked up, realities about quicksand is, and basically, if you just turn your body, if you move your legs around to make the water less viscous, you can get horizontal and float on top of it and then slowly move yourself to the edge to pull yourself out. It doesn't just like start to swallow you.
Oh, okay.
That's not reality.
As it's always depicted?
No, but that was apparently in the 60s, they had propagated this myth about it. And I think I read today that 3% of movies and TV, and that's a lot. 3% of movies and TV had a deathly quicksand depiction at that time.
I'd like to know how much quicksand there actually really even exists.
Exactly. I know there's some in Australia.
Yeah.
And I'm guessing there must be some in the jungle, some jungle somewhere.
There is on the Universal backlot.
I know there's some, right here in over in Tietze Park or over in McCree Park, there's a giant quicksand pit. We
can all right, exactly. jump in and
try it out.
Right, so we are all like more prepared for quicksand than we are for, say, parenthood.
Or, exactly.
Or, natural disasters. Or
balancing a checkbook.
Or balancing a checkbook.
Yes,
right.
yes.
it seems to me like, you know, Kurt, he's a guy who regularly, he moved to Africa.
I do love that he's Kurt now for the whole thing.
Whatever. He moved to Africa, but yet he doesn't seem to know how to handle himself in quicksand.
No, he doesn't.
He's a guy that regularly works in the jungle. He's an adventurer. He's an Indiana Jones type, right?
He's a tour guide for one mysterious story.
Yes.
And that's in that region, and you know that quicksand has been there.
Yes.
So, yes. You
know these things. We didn't mention, he's a tour guide for, what's it called, the Dakrana, or...
I don't even know.
Dahana, Dasani, something like that. It's a monster of the jungle, which is Machina.
Right.
But yeah, you would think a guy that is an adventurer would know how to handle himself in quicksand. But again, this guy is a complete buffoon, and no wonder his plane's getting destroyed. He's getting shot up by people.
Right.
Was he trying to blackmail the vaguely European guy by saying, "Oh, you're not really here for environmental protection"? Was he trying to blackmail him, or was he trying? Was he actually protesting because he was?
I think he was actually protesting. It was hard to tell.
The first time I thought so, and the second time I thought maybe he's trying to blackmail Norlis.
It's very possible.
The Euro. I couldn't really tell.
You've seen it twice, so you can tell me.
Let's all stop down and watch it. I'll watch it for a third time.
You'll never get that time back, Mark.
So Sheena pulls Upskirt Kurt out of the quicksand.
Yep.
And she is a gorilla at that point. So I see why you're probably confused, because at this point she is a gorilla.
Yes.
She was not the first gorilla, but she was this gorilla.
She was a full black gorilla here,
yes,
right?
Yes.
And then she was not the silver gorilla that's too silver to be a real silverback.
Yes. Yes, exactly. So I guess she will not impersonate. She dare not impersonate a silverback gorilla. But she will impersonate your average, everyday, you know, run of the mill gorilla.
Right.
So she pulls him in full gorilla form out of the quicksand. He's hit his head. He's kind of seeing, I don't know, it's almost like a mirage type vision.
Yeah.
He sees her transforming from gorilla to Sheena,
which is probably the better of the two transformations because it was super blurry.
Because it was super blurry.
Yes.
Exactly.
Yes.
Oh my God. When we get to that later animation.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Yeah. I rewound and watched it about 40 times. That was just stellar.
It was a thing, yeah.
And then she drags him to her village where Callie, the shamaness, lives. And this is the village where I guess she grew up. Callie raised her.
Yeah.
And of course, this is where we encounter the trope of, it, very much in your face, of that Sheena is the white savior.
Yeah.
This was, you know, I realize we are on the tail end of the white savior type thing, this, you know, towards the end of the 2000s, but it's just such full effect. It's very Tarzan. It's very, I know it's very much a throwback to Tarzan and things like that, of the white savior, but it's just, and again, having just watched Aziz, you can't, it's hard to look back. It's like, you look at yourself and then you realize everybody's shitty at one point, you know, in their life. They don't mean to be. They think they're being fairly progressive and they're not.
Yeah.
It's just like, you look back and you're like, ah, sorry, kids.
It was probably progressive to have a female savior. So.
Exactly. Yeah. But it is a little glaring at the now.
And
but
I'm sure you're probably going to play this, but I thought that Callie's comment, her very first comment out of her mouth was strange. I didn't order a white man.
Yeah. Yeah, she was kind of weird overall.
Yeah.
She had some weird dialogue. I love that when Sheena walks off in a huff, Callie just keeps talking to her. Even though the character's not even in the scene anymore, she just keeps rambling like she's still there in the scene.
Right.
And Sheena has just run off to be, you know, gorilla in the mist.
Right.
Which is strange. There's some really weird character moments. And later, Kurt is talking to himself in the jungle alone.
Yeah, we'll get to that.
Talking about how he crashed his plane. Like, who's he talking to? He can't know that Sheena is there.
No.
In her Wolverine form.
Right.
It was very strange. The other question I had is, this is the first time we hear Sheena speak, and she has an American accent.
And right.
So according to Callie's story, which I guess we should play, according to Callie's story, she was orphaned as a six-year-old in the wilds of the mist. Her parents were archaeologists at 6 years old. So in theory, she should have at least an accent that vaguely matches Callie's, you would think.
That is true.
There was a story once of a young white girl. Her parents killed. She wandered in the jungle. She lived with the animals, became one with them, became savage and kind, knowing and innocent. And she declared herself the enemy of people who would invade her world. The Dracna of this legend isn't so much a monster as a protector. Makes a good story for the tourists, doesn't it?
So that's Callie the Shamaness.
Yes.
And yeah, so she raised Sheena, and Callie is the last of her tribe, which I guess everybody in this tribe had the ability to shapeshift into animals.
Right.
But she's the, and Callie says, we're the last of my tribe, although Sheena's obviously not of her tribe, but somehow she has the powers of the tribe. And according to the comics, or maybe it was the original 80s movie, apparently the mountains cried out when they saw this white girl, and she was the protector of the people, which kind of further invokes the white savior trope.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Which I thought was funny. They don't really go so far in this one as that.
No, they didn't. I wondered.
I found some interesting trivia. So there was a 1955 series about Sheena.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And in that series, the little girl Sheena, her original name was Shirley. But here in this 2000 series, the little girl's original name was Cheryl.
Oh, huh.
Isn't that interesting?
Interesting.
So it was like a 50s, more of a 50s name back in the 50s, surely, but they 2000 it.
I guess that makes sense. It certainly wasn't really a big name.
Cheryl, but even Cheryl's like
Cheryl's,
yeah.
Well, Cheryl Teagues was big at the time, right?
Oh, okay, yeah.
No, I guess that's more 80s Cheryl Teagues.
But you're right. She still has an American accent.
Yeah, she's still got an American accent, which makes no sense. Like, they do get her. At first, I was like, well, how does she even know how to speak English?
Yeah.
I mean,
she has some book, right?
Yeah.
But how did she know how to read it? I don't know.
Well, yeah, and that's the thing. She's like, learned it from Callie. They throw in these like throwaway lines later. Like, you go to the Sheena cave, and she's got a big quantity of books.
Her parents true.
Were Americans. I guess Callie knows English, but why wouldn't Callie primarily speak to her in whatever her native language was?
That's a good question.
Mm-hmm. That's a very good question.
She should at least have some trace of an accent, even if it was a bad attempt at an accent, not... You know, not like a flat California accent or something.
I'm guessing Gina couldn't fake
an accent. I was going to say, they probably didn't want to stretch her acting chops any more than they did.
They probably couldn't afford any kind of, I don't know.
Linguistics coach or something?
Yes,
no.
To make something up? Yeah. Yeah. We don't really find out exactly where they are in Africa. We don't find out the name of the village. We just know they're in the Mist or La Vista or whatever it's called.
Yes.
Which sounds like an apartment complex in Dallas.
Yeah. Her retirement home.
Exactly. Maybe they are in apartment complex in Dallas.
Maybe so.
That is true.
Unmapped to the region of Dallas.
Right.
And of course, the other thing you have to ask is, why is Sheena so perfectly coiffed when she is a jungle girl? She's supposed to be savage, but knowing.
Right.
She has got straight up runway makeup going at all times.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
And I do love the fact that later when she hoses off underneath the waterfall, she goes from mud girl into perfectly coiffed Playboy model, complete with makeup and everything.
Yeah, of course.
You know, like, at least give us something. Like, Callie introduced me to makeup also.
Right.
Maybe she's born with it.
Oh. Maybe it's the jungle.
Exactly.
No, I agree with you completely.
Yeah.
That was annoying.
Yeah.
That was really annoying.
Like, no attempt at... When she was Mud Girl, okay, the Dakrana or the Dasani or whatever, okay, fine. That at least was an attempt at making her, like, roughing her up some.
Yeah.
Which was fine. It worked. She was covered in mud, whatever.
Yeah.
But then she takes it off. She's just perfectly glamored up.
Well, yeah. But they're obviously selling TNA in the show. So
I know,
they're not going to make her. They're going to make her try to look at the best they can to
sure,
try to pull it off.
But you can still TNA it up without.
Yeah,
making
I know
like,
what you mean.
She just came off the set of 90210, you know?
Yeah, true.
I mean, you can do like, you know, there's shows like The Handmaid's Tale, for instance, with what's her name from Mad Men?
Yeah.
Peggy, like, you can tell, like, she's obviously got makeup on for the camera.
Yeah.
But for the character's not supposed to be wearing makeup.
Right.
So she doesn't look like runway ready. They can give you just enough makeup to where you look okay for the camera, like you're not shiny and whatever.
Maybe the backstory is she looked into the eyes of Gina Lee Nolan in a Playboy and became that look.
Yes. She looked in the eyes of Hugh Hefner again.
Exactly.
It's entirely possible. Sure,
she said stuff, if she stares too long, stays with her. So maybe that's the part
true.
That stayed with her.
Maybe she gained the beauty tips of Heidi Klum.
Exactly.
Whoever was the... she gazed into the eyes of Pam Anderson and gained her powers. Yes. It's possible, sure. That, at least give me something that would explain why she's running ready at all times.
Yeah, not natural. It was not natural.
No.
No.
But I think they could have still had some TNA, but still make her look natural. I don't think that's that big of a stretch. But
I agree.
Again,
agreed.
We're at the tail end of the 90s.
Yeah.
We're Xena level TV here.
Exactly.
I understand. It's whatever. Again, going for TNA. We do get to see the Sheena cave, which I thought was awesome. She actually has a cave, and candles burn 24 hours a day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, true.
Apparently.
Yeah.
They never run out of fuel, or she's just constantly replacing them.
Maybe some people in the tribe are candle makers, and they just help her out. So
maybe
she's the savior of the area.
She has her constant supply of candles. Maybe she's afraid of the dark.
She's the true. White princess, and they take care of her. Duh.
Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely. Why doesn't she live in the village? Because she's a savage, I guess.
Exactly.
Living in the Sheena cave. this is where we find out that they're actually...
A savage living in the Sheena cave with constantly burning candles and books.
And a jaguar at some point, or a cheetah, or whatever that was.
Yep.
this is where they she finds out that they're actually mining things, because she starts to hear explosions in the distance. So she leaves the Sheena cave, and Norlis and his crew of generic Americans are blowing up trees, I guess.
Yeah.
To discover, supposedly they're looking for diamonds. I don't know how this helps you find diamonds.
Right.
Blowing up trees? Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean,
I don't think that's how diamonds work.
No, I don't think so either. Now, I understand that they're using, this is for oil and gas deposits, this is kind of how they use shockwaves to figure out where oil and gas deposits are, geologists.
Right.
And certain types of minerals, but diamonds themselves?
Yeah, I don't think so.
I mean, I understand you could figure out what type of rock, maybe where an approximation of diamonds might be likely to be found.
Right.
But not the exact spot.
You know,
he points, well, oh, it's igneous rock. There might be gold. And they're just like setting off dynamite, you know,
yeah,
left and right in this jungle and felling trees left and right.
Right.
The interesting thing is, like, apparently now they use like 70,000 pound trucks to do this instead of dynamite. They use like some sort of plate and it vibrates the ground.
Oh, okay.
That makes sense.
I went on a deep dive on this. I was like, is using dynamite really a real thing to figure out where mineral deposit? Apparently it is a real thing.
You put a question on Quora. Do they blow up trees to find diamonds?
I actually put that in. I said, do they use dynamite to find mineral deposits? And apparently it was a thing at one point.
Okay.
So did you notice, I was paying attention to the character of that scientist.
The nerd scientist?
The nerd scientist. Because I thought it was interesting how they had him dressed, too.
Yeah.
Because he was wearing this Hawaiian t-shirt and cap, while the two guys with him were more safari attired, you know, khaki clothes and stuff. And I found this scientist character to be kind of interesting, too, because he reminded me of Harold Ramis characters, like the Harold Ramis of Ghostbusters.
Mm-hmm.
He had that sort of Harold Ramis like quality, but slightly nefarious.
I was thinking Wayne Knight from Jurassic Park. You know, who was the evil scientist in that one?
Yeah.
Computer guy?
Yeah, because he was computer guy, Newman. Scientist, kind of nerdy, almost likable, but this guy, he was, though, kind of greedy. He's like, hey, 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 you know, it doesn't matter what I destroy here.
True.
Let's just get to the money.
Yeah.
You know? I thought it was an interesting character they had built in that one guy.
Well, as we all know about geologists, geologists are only in it for the money.
Totally.
Right, of course.
It's my money. Geology leads to money, which money leads to power, of course.
Of course.
Always in it for the money.
Always those geologists.
Stupid geologists ruining everything.
Greedy geologists.
Yep.
And so Sheena goes, this is when she dresses up as Mud Girl again. And this is I don't understand the costume change, because it seems like a lot of work to... You need a quick change.
Yeah.
A quick change is not lathering yourself up in mud, putting on your claws, putting on your mouthpiece, dirt, putting your hair in dreadlocks.
Why not just transform?
Exactly. Why not just change into Panther?
Yeah.
Like, call your Panther friend, change to a Panther or a cheetah or whatever, a rhinoceros.
Yeah.
Maybe a hippo. Hippos are the most deadly animal on Earth.
Or yeah, anything. Yeah.
Like, charge him as a hippo.
Yeah.
Have a hippo attack.
I agree. Yeah.
I realize it's not in the budget.
Yeah, true.
I realize dreadlock mud girl is probably a lot more cost effective.
Right.
But again, if you're...
It doesn't make too much sense to the character.
If you're looking for necessity of speed to go take down some bad guys, I think I would change it into hippo
rather than
go for that. The funny thing is, when she attacks everybody, she starts attacking all nerd geologists and Norlis and the whole crew. And she attacks one of the guys with her claws.
Yeah, yeah.
And it makes the whew, whew sound. But the guy never gets cut.
Yeah, I noticed
that
too.
But there's no blood.
Yep.
One guy randomly shows up later with scratches on the side of his face.
Yep.
But the guy that actually gets attacked by the claws, no blood.
No blood at all.
Just kind of scratches him in the air right above his face, and that knocks him out.
Yep.
Just no real effort at all to give any...
I know, a little effect.
Yeah.
And was that before or after her shower?
This was before the shower.
Okay.
Because this is when we get to Upskirt Kurt talking to himself in the middle of the jungle.
Oh, yeah. We got to
fire.
We got to play this little bit of audio.
I have never lost a plane. I've been in firefights, been in medevacs, even sat down in a hot LZ. And I have never lost a plane. I lost my damn plane.
See, to me, that just... Kind of like you were talking about last week in Dirty Dancing, where you thought there was that scene that fake Patrick Swayze was he read that, and that's what cast him the role. I feel like he had to have a lot of emotion around his lost plane. They're like, here's a little plane bit. Just, you're going to be by yourself. Just put all of your effort into this, and let's see how you read. And that's probably what won him this part.
Very unnatural. He doesn't seem like the type of guy to be talking like having a random monologue in the forest. Like maybe if Mendelsohn weren't around.
Yeah, right. You're
talking about, okay, I've landed in a hot LZ.
Right.
I never lost a plane in my life as I'm a generic Southern guy.
Exactly.
I mean, it's just made no sense.
I never lost a plane. I lost a plane.
But this is when Sheena shows up as Full Mud Effect, and this is when we get the sexy waterfall shower. Apparently, this is the only waterfall in the jungle.
Right.
Like, can I borrow your waterfall?
Yes.
And he's like, of course. And so this is when we get the Playboy shoot Ladies of the Jungle in full effect, because she hoses off the mud.
Oh, yeah.
It doesn't take her but maybe a second to wash off all the mud.
Right.
And we get we get a shot of her muddy butt. We get some side boob. get her lingering over, cupping her boobs.
Yeah, like the grins over the shoulder. Being washed. And then
we get Upskirt Kurt just forgetting completely what he was going to say when he sees her nude.
Right.
She turns his full direction, unashamed of her body.
Exactly.
He completely forgets what he was going to say. It was just so,
yes.
So Leisure Suit Larry.
That was so weird. That scene was so weird because at that point, though, she's like you said, she turns around and continues showering, though, but facing him straight forward.
Yeah,
making awkward eye contact.
He's then making full eye contact with him, which is completely impossible. No dude would be able to maintain full eye contact, eyes staying at her eyes.
Right.
Impossible. I call it right now. That's impossible. And number two, though, he continues talking like nothing's happening.
Yeah.
Yep.
He just keeps talking.
Rambling like a madman.
And she's just, looking right at him.
Yeah.
Yep.
Standing there naked, showering.
Which I can believe it on her end because she's a savage, a knowing savage, but a knowing savage. Right. She has no shame in her body.
Right.
But him, like, what a creep.
Yeah.
What a creep.
Speaking of creep, this is what I claim to be one of the Me Too moments in this episode.
All right.
That happens right after the shower when they're talking. She's kind of giving him a little bit of background on the legend and confessed that she was the one who was transforming and all of that. And he kind of talks about his business and what that means for him.
Kali taught me how to feel the animal spirit inside me. We call it the manta. I connect through the eyes. And then I'm fur and fangs.
Okay.
I can't stay that way for long. If I do, I'll carry a part of it with me when I change back. So if I'm a lion, give me some time before you say hello.
Got it. Important safety tip. Well, there goes a fortune in tourism. I mean, who's gonna hunt a creature that looks like you? Okay, several guys, different tour.
I was like, that's a really creepy line.
Yeah.
Different guys, different kind of tour. Like, the hell? You're going to go shoot out this naked blonde woman in the jungle?
Seems like a Jeffrey Epstein level tour. Like,
it really does.
I mean, when you've had that level of money, I mean, there's only one animal left to hunt.
Right.
It's beautiful playmates that are stuck in the jungle alone, naked and afraid.
Exactly.
Yeah, and he's unabashed about just right to her face. He's like, okay, so I'm going to exploit you with other people in different ways.
Yeah, exactly.
I've exploited you before, but wait, there's another way we can exploit your
now
sexuality.
That I've seen you under the waterfall.
Yeah.
I'm going to exploit you, and I'm going to make money off you, but with other people in other ways. Yeah,
exactly.
Just letting you know, and you're not going to get any more of that money
exactly.
than you were before.
You're a knowing savage. You don't need any of this.
Right.
What a jerk.
What a dick.
He is.
He's such an ass. Stares at her creepily, and then threatens to have her hunted down.
Fucking Kurt.
Fucking Upskirt Kurt.
He just sees dollar signs in his eyes.
He does.
I did think it was funny the next morning he woke up with a chimpanzee spooning him.
Yeah,
I did enjoy that
funny.
Moment.
That was pretty funny.
I thought it was going to be Sheena that was spooning him.
And then he commented that it was spooning him.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which I was like, well, that's an odd form to take. Like, why not just spoon as a lady?
Right.
Maybe a gorilla. You have a little more warmth as a gorilla. Be a lady gorilla or something. But that was funny that it's in later. Apparently in the comic book, she has a pet monk or a friend chimpanzee named Chim. Real creative name type, by the way. Yeah. Chim from chimpanzee.
Real detailed, yeah.
And then she's like, oh, I just called in a favor. You said you were cold, so why not give him a jungle blanket or something? Why does he need a chimpanzee? And it's funny how the chimpanzee gets all offended, too, and beats his chest and runs away.
Yeah.
Wouldn't it be funny if he'd, like, ripped off his arms?
Like, he liked being the big spoon.
Yeah.
She called in a favor. I wonder if in future episodes this chim actually does show up, and maybe that's the joke. Maybe
right?
She's like, I cannot be close to this guy anymore. Chim, please, step
in. Please take it.
Spoon him, please.
Yeah, I can't do this anymore. Maybe the chim gets under a waterfall shower.
Yeah.
rubs its ass seductively and its boobs.
He has a whole new set of feelings.
His little chimpanzee boobs.
His little pink butt showing.
Yeah. He also knows some guys would be up for that tour as well.
Right.
Again, funded by Jeffrey Epstein.
Yeah. Whole other set of guys.
Whole other set of
Me
guys.
Me too.
Yeah. So in the next morning, now Kurt wants Sheen to help him take down Norlis because did we even talk about? Yeah, we haven't gotten to the plane explosion yet, have we?
I don't think so.
Or maybe we did. In the first one, when she took him down, she blew up Upskirt Kurt's plane because she stole the dynamite.
But that's how he lost his plane.
That's how he lost his plane. Yeah,
I don't know if we talked about it.
No, we didn't. In this case, he wants to get the money so he can get a new plane, and he feels like she owes him that. And she doesn't really care. She just wants to basically kill Norlis and his crew to get him out of the Vista. It's just the snare that captures Upskirt Kurt is so stupid.
Yeah.
So Sheena warns Kurt of there could be, she's like, let me go first. There could be traps out there.
Right.
Okay, logical. She's a knowing savage. She knows things.
Kurt doesn't give a shit.
There's a wallet on the beach that just has like $50 stuck out of it. He goes up to it, realizing there might be traps. And of course, this is a lure that is like a rabbit lure and snares him up into the tree. And now he's upside down, caught for Norlis.
Because all Kurt cares about is cash.
That's all Kurt cares about is cash. Yeah. Yep. Kurt only gets...
And nude women in the jungle, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. And airplanes.
Yeah.
Really likes airplanes. And then Sheena, like, basically, Norlis says, we want the Dasani to come out, and rather than come out in some sort of beast mode, whipping ass, she just walks out, strolls casually out into the jungle.
Yeah.
And then they, I don't think we pulled this audio about, they realize they're not afraid of a woman. What can a woman do? And then she proceeds to whip their ass as a woman, which, you know, I thought was appropriate.
That was great. I enjoyed the fact that there's a guy hanging upside down from a rope, and he's like, I'd like to be cut down, please.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then Sheena beats up four guys and cuts him down.
Eventually, yes.
Yep.
Which I for shows of the time, again, I think this was, like you said, even though it was a white savior, even though it was all full of TNA, I think this was somewhat progressive from that same way. It's a woman that's kicking ass, and the guy, kind of like Steve Trevor in Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
He is kind of the male accessory.
He's kind of machismo, but then he also is put in his place a lot.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Much like Steve Trevor was in Wonder Woman. He is there, much as women previously were eye candy. He's the eye candy, I suppose, in this case. Not to say that she's not.
Yeah.
But she was
in both cases, fairness.
Yeah, he was just there for quips and eye candy, really.
Yeah.
And have one kind of cool kip-up moment where he knocked away a gun. That's pretty much right. It. I thought that was, I think for the time, maybe that was progressive, much like Xena. You know, Xena was kind of progressive in that way. So,
yeah.
A little bit of applause, maybe?
Yeah.
A little snaps, maybe?
I think Sheena's like a multi-layer cake of both misogyny and women's empowerment.
Yeah.
And, you know, you eat the layer cake for the layer that you like, and you... Overall, it's weird and slightly enjoyable.
You kind of got to put the picture in the frame of the year 2000.
Yes.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I'm just on that cake for the frosting. That's all I care about.
Right.
I don't care about the insides. Just give me the frosting.
Exactly.
That's all I care about. I did like the wink, wink, nudge, nudge line after this battle goes down. When Sheena finally explains about the silverback gorilla, and she's like, there's some animals I don't get along with. And Cutter says, rogue animals kill. Other animals are ... playmates.
Right.
Of course, Bailey Nolan was a playmate.
Good point.
Like, wow, could you just
be a little more on the nose?
Why not have an actual wink, wink, nudge, nudge moment? Like, he kind of kicks her in the ribs a little bit. Why not?
Because, you know, you were in Playboy as
you were nude in the ladies' Baywatch special.
Exactly.
And then she, the other thing I thought was funny was when she kicks these guys' asses, she tells Kurt and to jump into the water. So they jump into the river of the conger or whatever. And she calls the alley of these crocodiles forth to attack the other guys. These guys come into the water as the crocodiles are attacking. Rather than retreat back into the beach where they were previously safe, they decide to climb on the tail of the plane that's sunken in the middle of the water.
Right.
Rather than retreat to higher ground where crocodiles probably aren't going to go.
That's a good point.
And then they die because they're screaming in the distance. Another point, I don't think crocodiles could jump, and these guys were on top of the tail of the plane, which is pretty high off the water. I don't think...
They can't jump.
I don't think crocodiles can jump from the water, so I think they're probably safe, unless they, too, were shapeshifters.
True.
Possible, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, we'd have to watch more episodes to know.
Well, I guess we would.
Which won't happen.
Probably not. Maybe she can transfer powers of a monkey to the crocodiles.
That's true.
She can stare lovingly into a monkey's eye, and then stare lovingly into a crocodile's eye.
Then it can jump,
Give them mad jumping skills. We get back to the Sheena cave. There is her pet cheetah or leopard or whatever it was sitting there. She says she needs the leopard because it has better nocturnal senses.
This whole last scene is just probably the gold of the whole episode, I think.
It's nonsensical gold.
All of this, the transformation here, I know you're going to get into it, but the insane to the middle of the earth pit that's randomly in the middle of this cave. Yeah, this whole thing is crazy.
Yeah, there's a pit in the middle of this cave that is like in Pacific Rim, the Earth's butthole of Pacific Rim that they're all fighting over, trying to get through another dimension. This is basically that same portal to the other dimension.
Basically popping out the other side of the world.
Exactly.
It's so deep.
It's that deep. It's ridiculous. So they're in the Sheena cave, and this is the same cave where Norlis and Geologist Nerd are coming to get the diamonds.
Right.
The $500 million worth of diamonds. It's the same cave, and Sheena says she knows that they're coming to the cave, and so she needs the leopard because it has better nocturnal senses. Even though it is full on daylight in every part of this cave, why does she need nocturnal senses? There's
at least enough candlelight or some kind of lighting going on in there.
It's as bright as a target in the cave. She doesn't need nocturnal senses. It makes no sense. But we do get the gold of this Animorphs style transition, which I don't know if you guys are familiar with the Animorphs books from the 90s. They're not the young adult novels of these kids that had the powers to transform into animals. I would say Google Animorphs. You'll see some wonderful covers of it was better animation than this TV series had. They basically used a cheaper version of, was it Michael Jackson's black and white video where he was morphing into different people?
91.
Yeah. Yeah. So that where he like morphed into the panther, whatever. It was that level of technology, but way cheaper.
Yes.
So it was like 1987 quality of morphing into a black and white video.
It was 87 quality in the year 2000.
Yes. It was the prototype they used in the Michael Jackson video like 10 years before.
Right.
And he, when black and white was just a gleam in his Billie Jean eye.
Right.
This is what he was dreaming of. It was so terrible. And why was Kurt having like, he was acting like he was having a seizure while she's transforming. He was just like shaking and like about to vomit. And
he was disgusted.
It was very gross. He was instantly turned off.
That was his intense acting there.
That's what you call acting. I'm an actor.
I guess you're watching his sexual attraction leave his body. He's like,
Or maybe we're reading it wrong. Maybe he was feeling more sexually attracted.
That's true.
Maybe he was having a moment in his jungle pants.
Exactly. We don't know what was happening in his underoos there.
We don't.
Underoos?
It's entirely possible.
Yes.
Maybe his George of the Jungle was screaming out. You never know. He was really into it.
Right.
This is when the final battle takes place. And so Geologist ends up falling. They're crossing. This whole setup is weird. There's a tiny bridge of rock crossing the hellhole. Yes. Norlis is able to cross it to somehow majestically maneuver his way around a tiny thread of rock that is ostensibly an obstruction to the hellhole. Geologist doesn't quite make it, falls into it, but not before Norlis steals the map. Somehow Geologist has already mapped the entire cave system on a tiny little, like, not even an 8x10 sheet of paper.
And has it sticking out all the way at the top of his bag.
Yes, like, you know, perfectly placed.
8 of the 10 inches are sticking out of there, so he just grabs that and basically knocks him into the Earth's butthole there.
and then Sheena attacks, and she's in leopard form, but then...
Well, Kurt comes up there first, right?
Oh, that's right. Kurt comes up to challenge him. That's right.
And then he nearly knocks Kurt into the butthole,
too. That's right. They fight. The brief exchange of blows.
Yes.
He's hanging on the edge of the butthole.
Yes.
And this is when Sheena jumps in leopard form. She jumps across the butthole, and...
Turns back into herself.
Yes, she leaves leopard form.
Yeah.
Rather than use the natural abilities of the leopard... the claws, the ferocity, the
leopard
strength,
yeah.
The teeth. She turns back into Sheena.
Yeah.
I guess for reasons.
Yeah.
There's a fight between her and Norlis. And rather than let Kurt die, fall into the butthole, she rescues him. Norlis gets away, but the silverback, he exits out onto the silverback's ground.
Yes.
Silverback attacks again.
Yes.
And we get to see the first guy from the opening scene. We cut back, a callback to that guy, and he's hanging in a tree. And then we suppose that's the end of Norlis.
Yes. Sure looks like it.
Wah, wah, wah.
Like you say, villain of the week. I'm assuming all the villains come in through Upskirt's tourist agency. I don't know. I'm like wondering how this goes week to week, but you know it's going to be something like that.
It's definitely
some
what
kind
should,
of poachers.
You should rename it to the Upskirt tourist
agency. Yeah, I was like, I like the sound of that. You know, this show at times has Indiana Jones, Spielbergish directorial qualities.
Yes. Aspirations.
They try.
Yeah. Or aspirational.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know, B grade.
Yeah.
Yes.
I would say. Some of the effects are sophomoral at times.
Yeah.
I can think of one example, like in that first plane explosion, one guy is like thrown to the sand, but then like after he falls down, a piece of plane casually falls next to him.
Yeah.
Like, it's so obvious that somebody off camera is like,
just drops a piece.
Drops it next to him. You know,
some highlighter. Like, he just drops it. Like,
really funny. But, you know, I make fun because there are a few things that you can spot like that that are funny. But overall, I think they did a good job because they did not have a motion picture budget.
No.
You know, so they did what they could. Yeah,
they made the best of the back lot. I mean, obviously, the caves look like giant pieces of foam or something. Like, there's just,
well,
but they do what they did what they could do for a syndicated show.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's like I love DS9, Star Trek DS9, but one of my criticisms of that show is they're always in cave systems.
Yeah,
and the caves look terrible. I mean, they're just, it's the same cave like treadmill basically they're on the entire time. They constantly go back to the caves. You know, it's the same. It's that you do what you
can.
They
didn't have even a Discovery budget.
Yeah, they didn't have that. Or like we talked about Mortal Kombat a few episodes ago, and they didn't have the budget to give women bras. Literally, did not have the budget for bras.
That was part of part of the facts of the show.
I guess they apparently, according to that show, they weren't allowed to bring their own bras either.
I was going to say.
If you see what was put to film.
Yeah.
But
again, that was about the same era as this show.
It was about you're right. It was about the same era. It was just a couple of years later, and same production budget.
Yep.
I know they do the best with the cans. I don't necessarily discredit the special effects per se. It's more the overarching details of the plot in heavy quotations there.
We watched Smallville, which was of this era. I mean, a few years later than this, but pretty close. And those effects left you wanting for sure.
Oh,
so we can definitely overlook that.
Yeah, we should maybe we should cover Smallville sometime.
The original DC TV show.
I at least want to cover Superboy at some point.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
1987 series, I think.
The thing is, I don't think the Smallville pilot's that bad. It gets a lot worse later.
That's true. Especially the one where they use kryptonite as fuel for race cars for Pete. Yeah.
Or people use it to make tattoos.
Yeah.
There's a lot of bad stories in that show.
Or Gatorade to fuel up your football team.
Right.
I think that was one episode. Yeah,
but this isn't the small cast. No, it's not. The Smallville cast.
All right. Well, any other thing else to speak of before we move on to fun facts?
Not for me.
Not really. I mean, I liked this more than I thought I would.
Yeah.
I think we talked about, you know, some of their downfalls and whatever, but I think it held its own enough that I could suspend my disbelief enough to kind of enjoy it for the most part.
Yeah.
And that if I was bored enough, I could watch another episode. And if I was a teenage boy, I could watch several more episodes. Yeah.
You may only need one. Like, good 10 minutes.
That's a good point.
Especially of the era when you didn't really have quite the same access of quality entertainment that you might have today.
Yeah. Quote unquote quality. Yeah.
Although that was the 2000s. Yeah, it's getting there.
Yeah.
You
know. You're still dial up. And
certain AOL chat rooms.
Yeah, true. Late 90s. Yeah. It started turning around.
Yeah.
But I kind of agree with Esther. It wasn't. I mean, I know we're going to give an overall review at the end of the fun facts thing, but it wasn't as bad as I had thought it might be.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's kind of maybe about VIP, maybe a little better, but kind of in that range of where it wasn't the worst thing, and if you take it for what it is.
I think I had the same complaint about Sheena, the character that I had about Captain Marvel, Brie Larson's Captain Marvel.
Yeah.
Is that just kind of played one note and kind of...
Yeah.
Monotone for me. Like, I wish they tried to play it for her for jokes somewhat, but they didn't really work. Like, I wish she doesn't have to be the quip machine like Kurt does, but a few more emotions.
You mean like the awesome joke of take a bite out of something and how do you eat if you don't do that?
Yeah.
And he's like,
I mean, they could have played that a few more things like that. Make her like give her some savage qualities or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
Play something for laughs with her. As opposed to just being a flat monotone cardboard cutout, which is kind of what I thought she was. I don't know. It's the same, like I said, same complaint I had about Captain Marvel. Like, they could have played that character for more. She's supposed to be a tough badass. It could be a little more lighthearted.
I think they were relying on Kurt for the humor.
Yeah, I get that. But I don't know. Okay, I kind of feel like then you leave everybody else in the dust. Like, give them something to work with.
Yeah,
like,
I agree.
A little few moments. You don't have to be a quip machine like Kurt, but give right. Give her something. I mean, come on.
Yeah, I agree with you that I wish that's a facet I would love to see in her character, that I don't really know. There's no friendly side to her at all.
Yeah.
And even the people she says are her friends, there's no real likability.
She's a jerk.
She is a jerk. There's no likability between her and any other individual.
Yeah, like she is, she's a jerk to Callie completely.
She is.
And Callie's just like, what are you doing? You're dragging a man to the middle of our jungle and exposing your powers? And yeah. What are you thinking? And she's like, just walks off in a huff.
Yeah, she's ultra defensive between the people that are closest to her. Mm-hmm. There's no likability between her and any other person.
That's on the little bit of quipping with Kirk. That's about it.
Yeah,
and
I agree.
Even then, she says the joke, and she's like, see, I can make a joke.
Yeah,
like,
exactly. Wah, wah,
wah. Okay, so I liked you for half a second there.
Yeah. Right.
And that's it.
Yep.
I wanted to like her so much, but I couldn't in this episode.
I agree. I agree. She just was, other than relatively emotionless, when she did have a moment, she was just a jerk.
Right. Yep. So if they had made her character a likable character, I could have hooked into this show a lot more and liked it and wanted to like it more. So that's, I agree with you that that's a strong footnote or note to anyone who's thinking about maybe remaking the show in the future and listening to this podcast 10 years from now.
Which I would hope all executives do.
Of course, yeah. I think
that's, make them more likable.
Executives listen to this to know what made the shows fail so they can change.
I wasn't a Gabrielle P1 by any stretch. Or Gabrielle, Xena. P1, but I thought her relationship between her and Gabrielle.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Gabrielle was her sidekick in the show.
Gotcha.
Like, they at least, Xena was a badass warrior princess in the show. Gabrielle was her sidekick, and they always had witty banter between the two of them. And I think that's what made Xena, like, you can, if you get past all the terrible effects and the terrible, you know, tropes of that era, they had a really funny relationship, and they had good dialogue.
I swear I'm not sure I've ever seen an episode of Xena.
I'm not saying it's a great show by any stretch.
I'm just saying it was such a token of our, you know, the era we grew up in. So many people saw it. I don't think I ever even saw it.
Well, I think that's what made that show watchable. And I haven't seen every episode, but I think that's what made that. And I think Hercules, its predecessor, from which it spun off of, did a pretty good job, too, of making the female heroes, like, you know, pretty much on par with the male heroes as far as the fun factor, as well as being tough, like they were pretty much saying.
Just don't look at modern Kevin Sorbo if you want to go back and enjoy Hercules.
No. No, he's following an entire different political camp than we like to set our feet
It's a little bit different now.
Yes, he is. All right. Well, I guess it's time to move on to some fun facts.
Hotter. The bodies are harder. The surf is wilder. The romance is steamier. The rescues are bolder. And the lifeguards are sexier. Baywatch is back.
So let's not waste any more time, Dave, Jimmy. Come on.
All right, I assure you, I'm not wasting any time.
All new episodes on an all new season. Baywatch, the most popular show on Earth.
Barbie doll and her dolphin do not move by themselves, but you can make the dolphin talk. Friend dolls not included.
She is a force of nature.
We'll start with a crash course and civilizing.
A true wild beauty with more than just disarming looks.
This is what civilized people do to each other.
Gina Lee Nolan shows what life used to be like before Baywatch.
Why would I do this?
And for the ladies, we threw in a little sidekick.
Sorry it took me so long. Rush Hour gridlock.
Sheena, weekdays on Horror.
All right, there are really almost no scores for this show. The internet doesn't have a lot about the show, but IMDb does give it a 5.7 out of 10. And I did notice Amazon, as is typical for them, we don't have it here, but I noticed when I was looking up, I was trying to look up the episode order for the show, because it's out of order on Crackle, by the way.
Right.
If you're watching on Crackle, the third episode they list was actually the pilot.
Yeah.
So the first one they list is not the real pilot. At any rate, Amazon gave it 4 out of 5, so of course. I think which is entirely too high. I think IMDb 5.7 out of 10 is about right.
Yeah, you know, oddly, this is rated lower than Dirty Dancing on IMDb. Yeah. I disagree with that. This was a better show than that.
I agree completely. The character of Sheena first appeared in the 1930s. She was actually a predecessor in the comics to Wonder Woman. She, of course, was after Tarzan, but she's the sort of the female equivalent of Tarzan. She's a, you know, the orphan that was raised in the jungle by animals and tribes people. She first appeared in the 1930s. She, like I said, she was the first female comic character with her own title. And she first appeared in 1937 in Great Britain, 1938 in the United States, preceding Wonder Woman 1, which was in 1941.
Mm-hmm.
Her success inspired a bunch of Jungle Queens. She, although her predecessor was apparently Rima the Jungle Girl, which was introduced in 1904 in the William Henry Hudson novel Green Mansions.
Whatever that is.
Yeah.
I've not heard of it.
There have been a lot of versions of Sheena. There was original Sheena stories in the 1980s in the Jungle Comics in May to October 1988. Obviously, didn't last very long. There was the Sheena transplanted from Africa to South America, and that was in 1998 to 1999.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was an AC Comics that I think they're still doing reprints of her comics today, AC Comics. And then there's also a 2007 reboot of Sheena that puts her in South America rather than Africa again. As you mentioned, Esther, earlier, there was actually a TV series, or at least maybe they were serials, in the 1950s.
I think it was a series, yeah.
Was it a film series? Okay. There were 17 Tarzan films. Okay. He produced 17 Tarzan films between 1933 and 58. That was Sol Lesser. And he had plans as early as 1952 to do a movie, but that project never came to fruition. He still wanted to do something. The Nasur brothers acquired the rights to the film property. They eventually did change their minds and decided to make a television series.
Yep.
So I don't know why I said it that way. That's how Irish McCullough came to play Sheena in the TV series, and which is told in Irish McCullough's television career pages. See? It's the bee's knees.
I mean, 26 episodes, not a terrible run. About the same, a little bit less than this one, but
26 episode of Sheena, Queen of the Jungle, were filmed on a shoestring budget in the jungles of Mexico over 7.5 month period in late 1955 and early 1956. It was a joint production between a Mexican studio and an American studio. It was run by the two Nasur brothers, and the series began screening in syndication, which I didn't know their syndication in the 50s and 60s.
Yep.
And this made Irish McCullough quite the star when she returned to California.
It was 84 is when the actual movie came out.
Yeah, there was a movie in the 80s which starred another playmate, and the plot is, while investigating rumors of a mystical healing earth whose powers are said to flow north from the sacred Gujara Mountain, two geologists who are Sheena's parents are killed in a cave-in, leaving their daughter Janet, in this case, an orphan. Janet, I guess a 70s name.
That's funny. Shirley, Janet, Shirley, Cheryl.
Cheryl, yeah. She's adopted by Shaman, who's not really given a name, just Shaman, a woman of the native Zambuli tribe, Princess Elizabeth of Toro. I don't know if that's a real lady.
I don't know, actually. That's a good question.
And because of a prophecy about the cave-in, when the sacred mountain cries out, this is what I was talking about earlier.
Yeah.
She is viewed as the child of the gods and renamed Sheena, Queen of the Jungle. As she grows up, Sheena, who is played by playmate Tanya Roberts, learns much from Shaman about the lore of the jungle and the ways of all its creatures. She's even entrusted with the secret of telepathic communication with animals. She's actually not a shapeshifter until the TV series that we covered today.
Oh, okay.
So that was the first time she had been a shapeshifter. She had just been just a telepath with animals, and that's pretty much it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Siskel and Ebert gave this movie in 1984 two thumbs down from both of them, and it was one of the stinkers of 1984. Leonard Maltin also said this film, he rated the film as a bomb, saying, "Tanya definitely swings as W. Morgan Thomas's comic book Jungle Queen, but Mother Nature forgot to endow her with a script. Supposed to be campy, but it doesn't work even on that level. Both the cinematography and the music belong in a much better picture."
I kind of liked Roger Ebert's comment, too. He said, "This movie is rated PG, not PG-13. It's probably the only PG-rated movie that will play continuously on the Playboy channel. You see more of Tanya Roberts than you did of last month's Playmate, when she was last month's Playmate, if I could talk." But yeah, I just thought that was kind of funny that, again, we're just going for the TNA angle of this character over and over again, apparently.
Yeah, to be fair, though, so when did Airplane come out? Well, that was 1980, right?
I thought it was mid-80s.
Yeah, it may have been past 80.
It was early 80s.
Before we leave that really fast, that film was also nominated for a Razzie.
Of course.
Okay.
Yeah.
Of course. No
it
surprise.
Was that bad.
I'm not surprised.
But go ahead with your
thoughts. No, I was going to say, so I think Airplane was rated PG, and I could be completely wrong, and I'm not going to fact check it now, but it showed boobs in Airplane. There was a scene in the middle of the plane when everybody's going hysterical, and they have the woman that just like close up on her boobs, and she's like jumping up and down hysterically.
Yeah, back in the day, the MPAA ratings were quite a bit different.
And Spaceballs, didn't they? They said the word "fucking" Spaceballs, didn't they?
I don't know, actually.
I'm pretty sure they did. If you go back and look,
I won't say they didn't, but I don't remember.
You'll be surprised that it's rated PG.
Yeah.
But like you said, the MPAA was way more lax, and it's weird how we've like digressed as a culture. We haven't progressed. Like, we've gotten so much more tight-assed about these things.
Yeah.
Which, you know, what I mean, I know they also didn't introduce PG-13 till a lot later after PG.
Yeah. I guess it was around in 84, since they referenced it.
It must have been early on in the days of PG-13, so that's probably why. There have been a bunch of uncredited Bollywood Sheena movies, including Tarzan Sundari, Lady Tarzan, Africa Dolly Sheila, and Jungle Key Betty, made throughout the 80s and 90s. As of 2017, Millennium Films was trying to make capitalize on Gal Gadot's Wonder Woman with a film reboot, but nothing has come of that yet. It was supposed to start production last summer, in summer of 2018, but that, as far as I know, has not started.
Ah.
This show, of course, was known for its fan service. Almost every episode puts Sheena and Kurt in some sort of situation where they're going to show skin. Of course, this was on TV. They covered up nudity for the most part. Although we saw some tasteful butt crack in this and some side boob.
That's as far as they go. Yeah.
We didn't see upskirt Kurt without a shirt.
Plenty of cleavage.
Sure. Oh, apparently her jungle outfit in this one was considered quite modest compared to earlier versions.
Really?
I mean, okay. She's full on. I mean, it's just barely...
It's barely covering nipplier area.
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, Sheena knew what she was doing when she made that outfit, because believe me, like, she created her clothing.
Yeah.
She had a choice of what to cover. And she's
true.
Like, no, I'm going to make this show.
Well, she's a knowing savage.
Exactly.
Knowing savage. as this review said, would you expect anything else from a Baywatch alumnus and Gina Lee Nolan? And of course, upskirt Kurt was also in Baywatch, so what else do you expect?
Exactly.
And you always get a few side boob shots, of course. DVD Talk Review said their review was okay, Jungle Adventure with attractive Nolan and Nelson around for eye candy. Sheena's drawbacks. She's a clunky, unwieldy fantasy shape shifting element. Stock characters and plots are easily mitigated by smooth production and okay performances, along with the necessary basics of can't fail jungle adventure genre. I'm recommending Sheena the complete first season. I know that you're going to recommend.
I thought that was kind of funny. Yeah, this is apparently this DVD release that came out later is where we got the nice 16:9 version opposed to the 4:3 that you'll get if you go to YouTube or Dailymotion, wherever it is. Dailymotion, yeah.
Okay. Some guy who on Saturday mornings archives.blogspot.com is calling for an animated version of this show. He says, I'm begging Sony or whoever has the rights now to do an animated version with either Nolan or another actress in the title role, but with their powers from the last series intact. You know there's an audience for that. Maybe.
It's by a hobby fan, apparently.
Not Nolan. Make it somebody who can do an accent that's non-American.
That's true.
And especially if you're animating it, who cares? Just have good, you know, vocal work. You don't have to have continuity from this original series.
Yeah,
that's true. Really not important.
Yes, there's plenty of reboots out there, and there's no reason to keep the continuity.
Yeah.
It is funny that one of the things I noticed in the Sheena cave is that Sheena's reading she's maybe just staring at the book called The Naked Ape. I don't know that she can actually read. But she's staring at a book called The Naked Ape. And I was interested, so I went to Wikipedia. And I found that this is a 1967 book by Desmond Norris, which was an attempt to compare humans to other animals and demystify evolution of the time. Norris postulated that sexual selection has caused humans to have the highest ratio of penis size to body mass, that earlobes developed as an additional erogenous zone to extend pair bonding, and the rounded shape of female breasts means that they are mainly a sexual signaling device rather than providing food for kids. Okay.
Interesting.
And because of this book, it was so popular, there have actually been two films based on it. There was the most notable of which was a 1973 film starring Victoria Principal, where an insecure teenager persuades his buddies to go on a road trip to the Southwest for the summer and doesn't tell him he's not planning to return. The trio meet a couple of females along the way. I don't know what that has to do with evolution of the human as a sexual creature. But okay.
And what's the title of that movie?
It was called The Naked Ape, also.
Oh.
Yeah. It was based on the book, loosely based.
Wow. Okay.
So there you go.
That kind of fits the theme of the show for her to be reading that in some ways.
It does.
That's more subtle than I would have expected they would have done for this series.
Well, maybe that's where she got her low cut outfit. She read The Naked Ape and realized, oh, I'm a sexy creature.
Yeah.
I'm a knowing savage. Or maybe she got Callie to read it to her, because again, we don't know that she can read.
Right.
Maybe that's why she's a sex bot.
Can I throw this in? Okay, so say you're writing this pilot right now, and everyone has agreed that she needs to be picking up a book and looking at it.
Mm-hmm.
What book would you suggest that she be looking at instead of The Naked Ape? What would you?
The Joy of Sex.
Okay.
Gosh, I can't even think of anything that that would fit.
I don't know, something by Elizabeth Warren, maybe Michelle Obama.
Yeah,
something real progressive that involves a business suit.
some Hillary Clinton book of the
Yes, Breaking the Glass Ceiling wasn't that Hillary's book.
500 French words.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Just something weird and like non-applicable.
Right.
Not the Hugh Hefner biography or something.
Right, exactly.
Okay, I just thought I'd throw that in there.
Ike Turner credits Sheena as the inspiration for creating when he was creating Tina Turner's stage persona. He chose the name Tina because it rhymes with Sheena.
All right.
Funny enough. Yeah, I guess he wanted her to be a badass and created the persona, so there you go.
Right.
Could have been Tina, Queen of the Jungle.
Right.
The Ramones named a song Sheena as a punk rocker after the character. The song appeared on the 1977 album Rocket to Russia. Fun fact about that song, it is one of the earliest songs to refer to punk rock as a subculture. Joe Ramone said that punk rock music would appeal to a savage jungle girl brought to civilization. He said, "I combine Sheena, Queen of the Jungle, with the primalness of punk rock. Then Sheena is brought into the modern day." So, had no idea.
Nope.
Gina Lee Nolan, fun facts. She started as a Price is Right model and went on to become a Playboy cover model, and then she wanted to star on Baywatch as Neely Capshaw. Sheena was really her only other notable thing after Baywatch, and now she has her own podcast, as every minor, major, or D-list human is want to have.
Generically called the Gina Lee Nolan Show.
Podcast, yes.
Yeah.
Fun fact about her, she has battled Hashimoto's disease, which is where the thyroid gland is actually destroyed and causes fatigue, weight gain, a pale or puffy face, joint muscle pain, constipation, dry and thinning hair, depression, panic disorder, and a heavy menstrual flow or regular periods. Guys, I think we found out why I look the way I do. Hashimoto's disease. I think I've just been officially diagnosed. So I do have heavy menstrual flow.
Yeah, there's a whole couple articles out there where she gets really deep dives into it, talking about weight gain and couldn't understand why it was happening and stuff like that.
I have known people that have Hashimoto's, and yes, I'm making light of it. But I have known, it does sound terrible. One of our friends that moved recently, she's been dealing with it for like 5 years. A real restrictive diet to get it under control. And we actually thought my wife had Hashimoto's for a while.
Yeah.
Turns out she didn't have Hashimoto's. She was misdiagnosed, but that's what they thought it was.
Yeah.
John Allen Nelson, fun facts, who played Upskirt Kurt, a.k.a. Cutter in this. He is from San Antonio, in San Antonio, Texas, which is about 4 hours south of here, 5 hours.
Mm-hmm.
Started out with a role in the soap Santa Barbara as Warren Lockridge. That's such a waspy
It's a very soap name. Yeah.
He wanted to do bit roles in Hunter, Scarecrow, Mrs. King, Perry Mason, Quantum Leap, and Matlock. He's also a former Baywatch star. He played John D. Court. I don't remember that character at all.
No, me neither.
His biggest role after Sheena was on 24, where he played the President Logan's chief of staff. And he was also in, he was Paul the wine guy from Friends, which I didn't remember that. Now, next time I go back to watch Friends, when he's like,
you'll notice it. Kurt. Exactly.
Fun fact, really nothing, because he's kind of an average actor. The only fun fact I could find about him was that he proposed to his wife over a candlelit Scrabble game.
Oh, nice. That's
the Christmas Eve of 2006.
That is so fun.
So fun. And the only other guy in the show, we didn't, I guess Dustin wasn't cool enough to put in the fun facts about the Shamaness.
There was nothing in there at all other than she'd been in Forrest Gump. She has done absolutely nothing.
Kevin Quigley, who played Middleton in this, he was the guy that was dressed up as a convict. He starred in the 1990 Swamp Thing TV show and the secret role of Alex Mack before landing the role in Sheena. Fun fact, nothing. He's got nothing going on.
These people didn't do much outside of the main couple.
No, they didn't. All right, to the year 2000 in TV. This is the year when David Letterman underwent quintuple bypass surgery in New York Presbyterian Hospital following an angiogram that revealed that one of his arteries was completely blocked. It was seriously constricted. Sorry.
Yep.
The Oxygen Network comes online. This was the year of the show Who Wants to Marry a Multimillionaire, which starred Rick Rockwell, who got married to Darva Conger on the show. It was watched by 22 million viewers in the finale, and it's revealed that when he and Darva are honeymooning, it's revealed that he is actually not a multimillionaire. He's a sometimes comedian, and he had a restraining order against a former girlfriend, and as a result, Fox cancels a rerun scheduled the next week and does not broadcast any new installments. In addition, the couple end their relationship soon after the show's taping.
Shocker.
TNN is rebranded from the Nashville Network to the National Network. After 50 seasons of baseball, NBC declines to renew its broadcast agreement with MLB. The WB broadcasts the third season finale of Dawson's Creek entitled True Love, in which this was the first male gay kiss on U.S. primetime TV, which has been called a milestone in the timeline of gay representation in pop culture. Kathleen Gifford made her final appearance on Co-host of Live after 17 years. 11 and a half years of which was in syndication. Regis Philbin continues to serve until Kelly Ripa introduced a new co-host the following year. Was that Michael Strahan that early on?
I don't think so. I think it was somebody else.
I wonder what Regis is doing now. I haven't seen
him. I think Strahan was still playing in 2000.
Oh, actually. Was he? Okay.
Yeah.
It's so weird that he's a co-host.
I know. He's on everything
talk
nowadays.
Shows now. It's so weird.
Yeah.
It's such a weird transition.
Yeah.
Especially with Kelly Ripa, like on the, like a daytime, it's just such a strange pivot.
No, I totally agree.
Never would have guessed that when he was playing football. All right, the top rated shows of the year 2000. I could not find the lowest rated shows, unfortunately, but I could find the top rated shows. Survivor, ER, Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? So Survivor was number one, ER was number two. Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? This was back when Who Wants to Be a Millionaire was in prime time.
I used to love that show.
Oh,
hosted by Regis.
Hosted by Regis. It took slots number three and four.
Yeah.
Friends, Monday Night Football, and Everybody Loves Raymond were all tied for five. Who Wants a Millionaire? Be a Millionaire again brought up number six for its third night of airing. Law and Order, and then The Practice. Sheena did not appear in the top 100.
Not a shock there.
Not in the top 100.
I could only find up to number 157, and it was also not in the top 157.
Nope. And it, Sheena was on which network? Fox?
It was syndicated, so I think it kind of was
like on UPN or something.
Your WBs, yeah. Wherever it could get purchased.
WB, I think, is where it was here in the DFW,
That would make total sense.
I was in college at the time, so I think this explains why I probably didn't have any notion. I barely watched TV when I was in college, so
yeah.
I made enough time to watch like Buffy and Angel, and that was about it.
Yeah.
It's about all I kept.
It was after college when you had three VCRs to record everything under the sun.
And then eventually like 50 DVRs.
Right.
Watch way too much TV. Shows premiering in the year 2000. The Gilmore Girls, Boston Public, Ed, which is still not on DVD, I found out today.
That's crazy.
It's not streaming anywhere. Apparently it's because of music rights.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. The Great Ed. CSI, The Original, Curb Your Enthusiasm, Malcolm in the Middle, Queer as Folk, and Survivor.
A lot of big shows that year.
A lot of big shows. Survivor's still going.
Yeah. Yep. Out of all of that you just talked about, really the only thing I was watching at that time, because like you, I was in college at the time, was David Letterman. And of course, before he had his heart event, but also after that, I remember the changing hosts that were filling in for him at the time. That was pretty... That was an interesting event in TV culture.
Not only that, but then when he announced that the lady he had had an affair with was trying to blackmail him, and he came out on TV and announced that he was getting blackmailed. That was interesting. I heard, I think it was Conan or Marin recently, or somebody that recently had him on the podcast, and he was talking about that whole thing that, you know, that was one of the pivotal points in his life was,
was a good call. To not deal with the blackmail.
Yeah, I mean,
just say it.
Good for him. I mean, that's... Yeah. I can't imagine the emotions you're going through.
Oh, sure, yeah. But,
you know, you already made that emotional mistake once, and then you have to go through it of exposing yourself.
Well, it's like, you know, got plenty of issues with Jeff Bezos, but the fact that he just threw all that out there, that he was trying to get blackmailed too by Inquirer or whoever it was. I can't remember.
National Enquirer.
Yeah.
Because they were trying to expose him because he's very anti-Trump, and so they were trying to get dirt on him to...
Yeah.
At any rate. Yeah, what a mess. All right, shows ending in the year 2000, Beverly Hills 90210, which is coming back as BH 90210.
Is it still coming back?
It's coming back.
Even with Luke Perry?
Luke Perry, they just showed a picture the other day with Brendan Walsh, who is looking not very young anymore.
I would imagine.
Appears to be a 20-something wife on the cast of the show, of course.
Benny Walsh?
Yeah.
Is Shannon Doherty going to be on it?
No, she actually isn't. She may make a guest appearance, but they said she's not going to be part of the cast, which means I'm sure you're going to bring back like Tiffany Amber Thiessen.
Yeah.
And I don't know. There's got to be...
The guy that's been doing all the Sharknado stuff, Ian Ziering.
Of course, Ian Ziering's going to come back.
Yeah.
And Tori Spelling.
Garth, I'm assuming.
I imagine they're not all doing much. I mean, Tori Spelling was only... She had a reality show for a long time.
What's her name that always looked 20 years older than all the rest of the cast?
I can't remember her name. The girl with the curly hair.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sure they'll all be back.
I'm surely.
I was a Beverly Hills 90210 P1 in the early years.
I was for the first couple seasons.
I watched the first few years, yeah.
Yeah. Didn't they have a recent 90210 show that was connected to the same universe?
I thought there was some kind of...
On the CW,
thing.
Right?
Yeah, I thought so.
It didn't last, though.
Yeah, I never saw it or anything, but...
I don't know if it had any of the original actors in it, but I guess this is going to focus on the original core cast.
Maybe that was like the new class, like the spinoff.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. All right. Also, Saved by the Bell, the new class premiered this year.
Ending.
Oh, ending. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Saved by the Bell, the new class ended, which was terrible, I remember.
Yeah.
I think it lasted one or two seasons.
Yeah, the new class.
Sucked. Yeah. Roseanne ended this year. Cosby, Tenacious D, the TV series, The Tom Green Show, and Boy Meets World.
Yep.
Love Boy Meets World. That was a classic.
It was a classic.
Yep. So there you go. You know, the question we always like to ask with all these is, would you like to see Sheena remade? We always ask every show about Sheena specifically. Would you like to see Sheena
remade? It's really weird.
But would you like to see Sheena rebooted in some form or fashion as a TV show?
Sure, I would. It has potential. It's a very interesting plot beginning of that there's this little girl abandoned, and she ends up being adopted by this shamaness who gives her these amazing powers. That is an interesting start point. And like we talked about, this show could have potential if had they made her character more likable.
Oh, yeah.
Then, sure. I think it has potential. But because it to keep this whole plot going, it does require a lot of special effects, mm-hmm. especially if they keep her as a shapeshifter. Then, yeah, it does require a lot of special effects. With special effects, there's always going to be unbelievability mm-hmm. that you have to deal with that makes you have to suspend your disbelief even more. So you got to weigh all that out into the equation. But yeah, I think that there's potential to have this remade as long as they make the character more likable. That's my opinion.
Yeah, I agree. Dustin?
Yeah, I actually, normally I don't want things to be remade. You know, call back to Dirty Dancing.
Yeah.
Please never remake that crap. But yeah, I actually think this show has, especially with like a modern twist to it, you know, going back to the Aziz Ansari, so woke that your eyes are, you know, you don't have a forehead anymore.
Yeah.
I do think that does apply somewhat, though, to this show. I think if you made it in a modern era, you could kind of fix some of the problems that it had. And like you said, the likability angle, I think, would also be good. I think you could, this could be like a really good, I don't know if this would necessarily be the landing place for it, but you know, like a, kind of like a CW type show, or maybe something that could be a Netflix show or something like that. I think, I still don't think it should be like a major network show, mm-hmm. but I think some of these other networks could definitely do something with it and make it better. And actually, yeah, I think it'd be kind of a cool idea to reboot it, actually.
Yeah, I don't know if you remember the CW, or maybe when they were the WB, they had a Tarzan show. Do you yes. remember this? It was a live action Tarzan show with what's her name from Walking Dead, from the first season of Walking Dead.
Yep.
And
went over like a lead balloon,
yeah,
as I remember.
Because the problem was they went from the jungle, they moved into Manhattan. They brought Tarzan to the city.
Oh. Yeah, why do that?
Yeah, exactly. I think you're removing some of the fun of the show. Mm-hmm. I realize it requires fewer special effects probably, but I think half the fun is being in the jungle. I think the way I would like to see it is, okay, if you want to imply that she has knowledge and she knows English and she has an American accent, maybe what happens is Callie raises her up into a certain point, then realizes she needs schooling, so she sends her, maybe mommy and daddy archaeologists were millionaires, so she has, or maybe they took the diamonds from the cave, the right. diamond, the $500 million, and maybe she's takes those diamonds, moves to, I don't know, go to university somewhere, grows up, gets an education, realizes that maybe the mist is under threat of ecological disaster because of the company they mentioned in this show. So she goes back to protect the jungle. She leaves university and goes back to protect the jungle.
Yeah.
That's a way you could get the knowledgeable savage part of it. And maybe just don't even show the college, maybe show the college years in flashbacks.
My understanding, the original Tarzan, it was a pretty actually intelligent person.
Yeah.
It wasn't just the guy. The grunts in the jungle. So I don't know. Yeah, however, I don't know how they did it in that. But
I don't either. But maybe that's the way you do it. That's how she can actually learn to read. She knows, that's why she speaks like an American. It's because maybe she spent 10 years there. And then she comes back to protect the jungle. I think that is a way to do it. And you don't actually show the years in modern society. You show her just returning to the jungle to protect it. And she's come. Maybe she's an outsider. And she's trying to reintegrate herself into her original society. I don't know. There's all kinds of ways to do it better than they did here.
Oh,
but
yeah.
I think it could be. I don't think it needs. I think it absolutely should not be a white savior trope again.
Yeah.
I think they should get a person of color to take this role.
Yeah, I was going to mention that too.
It definitely doesn't need to be a platinum blonde haired woman.
Right.
Playboy playmate. I think you got to get away from that. I'm okay with the upskirt Kurt character, you know, as long as he's kind of the eye candy for the show, he kind of reverses the typical
and added the humor and be kind of the doofus or whatever. Yeah, that's fine.
I think Mendelsohn was don't need that guy. He was a complete waste.
Yeah.
But I think it's got potential as long as they don't make her runway ready in every episode. She's just got just enough makeup to look okay on the camera, you know.
Yeah, it's interesting that they moved so many of the new versions to South America too. I wonder why that is. You know, just change it up. I don't know.
Maybe it was just cheaper for production costs too.
But I mean, even like some of the books seem to be in South America too.
Have been of the time too that maybe there was more fascination with the South American continent.
True.
Rather than you know Africa. Like Africa was big in the early 1900s.
Oh, big time! Yeah.
You know, like all the Tarzan stuff. A lot of times revolved around India. Jungle Book, of course, was huge. Kipling. that was more fascinated with the African culture. So maybe
Indiana South Jones America. Was kind of in that region.
Yeah, but remember Indiana Jones in the early 80s had that was South America in this in Temple of Doom.
Yeah,
that was South America.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
So maybe there was just a shift towards further interest in South America
but
because of
the
that.
Raiders was in that region though, right?
Was Raiders? I thought was
because I know India at least played a part in it, right?
Yeah, Raiders was in Africa.
Yeah, Africa. And, because, okay, yeah.
He goes to Egypt and
yeah.
He's in India for a little bit, I think. I think there was just a transitioning fascination with South America at that point.
Panama Canal brought fascination over to South America.
True. That's true. Very true. So maybe that's why. I don't know. I think it'd be cool to go back to have, you know, maybe the original African story or something like that.
Yeah,
but,
sure.
You know, the special effects are so cheap nowadays compared to what they were into the year 2000. Like, I was watching Titans last night on the DC Universe app, and they have one of the characters is a shapeshifter, and he shapeshifts into a tiger, and granted, it's a green tiger, but, you know, it's still it's light years beyond what it, you know, could have been. They can't have that massive a budget on that show to do that.
Yeah, I mean, she could even be, I don't know, a Fairchild from some explorer that comes through there or something. Who knows? They could do a lot of different things.
Yeah.
Kind of mix it up. Because it would make more sense if she had some kind of tie to the actual native tribe.
Well, maybe
opposed to them just giving this outsider woman these abilities.
Well, what if the mom was an original shaman for the tribe? And maybe she was supposed to be the next shaman and she left.
Yeah.
And she got married to some explorer.
Yeah, exactly.
The tribe. Came back, she died and whatever, and left her with the existing tribe, something like that. I mean, there's ways to do it without having the white savior trope. I think that's interesting. And I think it would be cool to have, again, a fun, female-led, strong character that kind of harkens back to Tarzan and is an adventurer. You don't see a lot of female adventures in you know, shows.
No, that's true.
They're usually, it's kind of the reverse. It's usually the male adventurer type.
Almost always,
Even today. So it could be fun to do that, something like that.
Outside of, maybe, like, if you made a good Tomb Raider or something.
Yeah.
I mean, there's not a lot.
So that's a good point. I haven't seen the new Tomb Raider, but they did make the new Tomb Raider more realistic.
Yeah.
Like, she was not, again, runway ready like the Angelina Jolie version.
Right.
She was more realistic body proportions.
Okay.
You know, well, that's the video game.
The video game did not concern themselves with that.
No, they did not. Those giant triangles, giant polygons.
Right.
She knocked people out with the polygons.
Right.
No. Yeah, it was definitely more realistic. I haven't seen the movie or heard, you know, good or bad.
I actually have that. I haven't watched it.
Yeah. But it looks, from the trailer and all and stuff, it looked a lot more realistic for that type. Like, she's in the middle, you know, of adventures. She's going to get dirty and muddy. And,
right.
Like, greased up and stuff. So.
Yep.
And that, you know, not greased up in a fun way, but, you know, for Upskirt Kurt's tours.
Right, exactly.
Upskirt tours. Right.
All right.
Please
well,
do not call it that.
Any final thoughts on Sheena, Queen of the Jungle?
My overall score was probably about a 6 or 7 out of 10, 6.5 out of 10. The story and execution was a little higher, but I had to reduce it a little bit for the misogyny and creepiness of this particular series, or at least this pilot.
Yeah, a different kind of guy.
That it just, you know, as a woman, that's how I viewed it. So there you go.
That's totally fair. I get it. Yeah, yeah. I would think 6 out of 10 is about. It's, you know, I expected far worse, I guess, than what we got.
I did too, actually. I figured it would be awful.
Yeah, I mean, we picked it apart a lot, but I mean, that's half the fun. It's funny, I was listening to, you know, to go back to getting Conan, I hate to do this, but I was listening to his recent episode, and he said, you know, if we believe there's an afterlife, it's just going to be whatever deity is just exposing how often I've hate-watched things, and what does that say about my life? He was talking about the original Ocean's 11 with Frank Sinatra. But it's like, I mean, we kind of hate-watch things out of a fun aspect, but at the same time, it's like, I think we do a pretty good job of acknowledging when, it's bad, but it has potential, you know, and I think we acknowledge when they do things well, or they've attempted to do things well, maybe just didn't work in the execution.
Attempted?
Attempted. It's appropriate for the show, it's attempted.
I was going to say, did you do that on purpose?
It's attempted, yeah. I'm not that smart. I'm very, very stupid, and I don't speak well. Me not speak good. I'm not a knowledgeable savage. I'm just a savage.
You're an unknowledgeable city boy.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think they did an okay job, and you know, could have been better, could have been worse.
Yeah.
Could have been Dirty Dancing.
Yeah.
And that's, yes. So, yeah.
Could have been My Mother the Car.
I'll give it one thumb up and, you know, one thumb down. So.
Yeah. That's probably about right. Yeah. It's right there in the middle. 5, 5.5, 6, somewhere in there.
So IMDb had it right for once.
They did.
All right. Well, Esther, anything you want to tease? Anything you want to promote?
No, not right now. I should have been prepared for that question,
Sorry.
but thanks for letting me be on here this week. I had fun, and I know we've already said it like three times, but I also thought that this was better than I expected. So, yeah, always fun chatting with you guys.
We even talk about the original plan was to do Dinotopia, which Esther thought was Dinotopia is not dinosaurs. The
right. Not the ABC ABC TJIF show.
Not the baby.
Not with the baby dinosaur.
Yeah, which is what she was thinking it was. And I sent her the link for Dinotopia, and she's like, this is not what I thought it was. Dinotopia is actually based on a book from the 90s that was about a dad and his two sons that crash landed a plane in a society that is co-ruled by dinosaurs and humans.
I guess it's not what I thought either.
It is not.
Because I thought it was the dinosaurs show as well.
I was thinking maybe next time we have Esther on, we could do not the first episode of Dinosaurs, but the last episode of Dinosaurs, which is very dark.
Okay.
And maybe we can do that. Deal. Maybe we can talk about that.
Deal.
But sounds good.
We'll definitely have Esther on in the future. So we'll catch you guys for the next very special episode of The Pilot Project. The Pilot Project is produced by Mark Hudson and Dustin Taylor. We have new episodes every Friday. Email us at pilotprojectpod@gmail.com or find us on social channels as @pilotprojectpod. Links to subscribe to this show for free and links to the TV shows we watch can be found in this episode's show notes or on our website at pilotprojectpod.com.
Thank you for tuning into The Pilot Project.
I'm loving this show.
We hope you enjoyed the show. See you next episode.